listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Glad to have you this week. Man, we have been running through some really cool series lately, and we're going to take a break from the series work. Mainly for my benefit.
We're not taking a break. It's just a one-off series.
It's a one-off.
Yes,
it's a standalone.
A special event series.
Special event.
Like they used to do with movies on...
One night only.
Yeah, like this is the, you better be here. It's not going to happen again.
This is.
You Unless you're listening on our podcast, which, hello, you should listen to it on our podcast.
We're going to talk about some stuff that I hope never happens again.
Yeah, for you personally, and for these guys probably as well.
That is probably true. Yeah, we've got a couple of guests in studio this week, and we'll introduce them just momentarily. But thank you for listening to the Outdoor Hour. As a reminder up front, you can follow us on social media at outdoor_hour. You can find some of these episodes in video form on YouTube, as always, or wherever you download streaming audio. Be sure you go check out the Outdoor Hour and follow us on social media there. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff that is not our norm this week, and I am really excited to have some good friends in the studio. We're down a friend this week, though.
Yeah, we are. We are.
Where in the world is
Joshua Wildman Stratton?
Josh has been a good dad this week.
He is. Shout out to him.
Yeah, and a good husband, picking up some extra dad duties.
He better be making some chicken noodle soup. That's all I'm saying.
There's some stuff going around, man. There really is. So we are without Josh in studio this week, but that's all right. We've got a couple of guests. I am Taylor Maples.
Bye-bye, boo-boo.
I just shot a bear.
Oh, man. Yes.
And you have a fellow compatriot with you in the studio today, too.
I do. I'm not the only one.
Nope, you are not.
I do love that. The Lord of the Boards behind the glass, the one and only Maddie Goldfish.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Goldfish!
And we do have a couple of great guests this week from just down the road here in southeast Oklahoma City. Couple of different businesses on the property. Museum of Osteology, Skulls Unlimited. Last week I introduced maybe the bravest guest that we'd ever had in studio. These might be the toughest guests. At least they've got the toughest stomachs and noses. From Skulls Unlimited and your very own Oklahoma City Museum of Osteology, help us welcome Mike Chisholm and Jaron Villamoret this week inside the Outdoor Hour. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, man.
Do you guys get walk-up music often in life?
No, we don't.
Every now and then.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things, growing up in athletics, I feel like I just, when I'm doing something, walking into a room, it's like I need a little bit of some vibes set, so we do that here at the Outdoor
Hour. I like it.
You got to feel special every once in a while, you know?
We do cut the occasional ringtone for someone, so, you know, if that's something you need.
You still need to set up your Cameo page for that, bro. Like, 100%. You would get people. Like, no joke.
I don't know how much I want this floating around out there, but I have a handful of, like, 12 and under baseball teams that I do walk-ups for every year, just, you know, for fun.
Yeah.
People that over the years on Twitter have been like, hey, man, would you record some stuff? And I do.
So, do it. There you go, man.
If you're on Twitter and you're looking for some of that, please don't completely inundate me, but more than
no,
happy
come
to
Goldfish, Matthew.g.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I'll set all this up, all right? You're coming through me.
Matthew.g@tylermedia.com.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Go. That's really fun. Well, Jaren and Mike, thanks for joining us. You guys seriously have some of the most unique jobs of anybody we can ever talk to. You hear about Mike Rowe and the dirty jobs thing. I think you guys fall into that category in a big sense. But you guys have just
weren't you guys on that
job.
Show?
We were, yeah.
Yeah.
On Netflix right now. You can
really.
Yeah, the Dirty Jobs episode with us. It's on Netflix.
See, that's all the research I do for these shows. I know these kinds of things. Yeah, just get a little tighter there. Oh, yeah, is that what we need? Perfect. Yeah, dirty jobs, unique jobs. We need that. We have dirty jobs with Mike Rowe. Obviously, he does a lot around Oklahoma. We need an outdoor hour. I don't know how the spin would be, but
hey, Mike Rowe, come be a part of America's greatest outdoor show.
America's greatest outdoor show. We should do a Mike Rowe interview.
He loves Oklahoma.
Yeah,
he does.
He'll totally
he really
be
does.
Here.
He does a ton with OERB. And
oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I like it.
I mean, you're the sales lead.
The wheels are turning. I know. I know that falls on me. Suddenly,
like, this is where you take over, sir.
Yeah,
I'm all just right. The idea guy.
We might have to do something about this, but man, you guys have come through for me in big ways several times over the years. For starters, the Museum of Osteology. If you have not been there as a family, you need to go check this out. This is one of the coolest, best-kept secrets ways to spend a day in Oklahoma City. From like just a public-facing, educational, family-friendly environment, it is such a cool thing that you guys have that many, many people don't. Maybe they've seen a couple of billboards, you know, down on that side of town. But and I know that's something your family has done for a long time. Can you share a little bit just about that museum?
Yeah, sure. So my dad started Skulls Unlimited in 1986. Started off cleaning skulls in our garage and on our kitchen table back when I was a little boy. And then he moved into a small business with my grandfather. They kind of had a split business there off of Shields. And from there, it started growing. And then we moved off of Sunny Lane, where we had the one building. And then in 2010, we opened the second building, which is the museum. So it's, I think, one of our best years. We had over 60-something thousand people come through.
Wow.
We average in the tens of thousands now. So
yeah.
It's a pretty cool museum. We just opened a biodiversity exhibit in there. So if you like taxidermy,
cool.
Lots of awesome taxidermy in there.
Really?
Yeah, polar bears and all that.
For tax, like what kinds of taxidermy? Is it shoulder mounts, life-size
kind
of
stuff? Shoulder mounts, everything.
All the above.
Okay, because when I think of the museum, just from the three or four times I've been there, it's all like articulated skeletons.
That's kind of a cool twist on there because you kind of see some of the animals with skin on. And then you can kind of see the skeletons next to it. It's really cool.
Yeah, step
it's
back
really,
out into really the museum cool. and do some comparison.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
In concept, it reminds me a little bit of that, I just had the name for it, but that it was like a Smithsonian-level exhibit where they had like humans that had donated their bodies.
Yeah, the bodies exhibit.
Yeah. So similar but different. You guys have done work of that caliber, though. You guys send your cleaned articulations all across the world museums.
Yeah.
So.
The Muter, Smithsonian.
Yeah, Smithsonian. We've done, we work with all kinds of aquariums and zoos around the country. A handful of years ago, we did a whale skeleton for the Georgia Aquarium. I mean, we've done it all.
That's really, really cool. Yeah. And we're going to get more into the process. We're definitely going to just talk hunting in general because these guys are bona fide killers and we can't do an outdoor hour.
Was that pun intended?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much.
Well,
was,
I see what you did there.
Yeah. But man, seriously, just quick endorsement for the museum itself. If you've got kids, like a couple of years ago, I brought my, at the time, probably 9-year-old nephew through and like 6-year-old niece. This was before I even had kids. And they still talk about it, and they haven't been back to Oklahoma City since. And they're like, hey, remember that time we went to the museum? And, you've got the whale hanging from the sea. Is it a blue whale in there?
Humpback whale.
Yep. Okay. Just the size of that. I'm not brave enough to, like, walk under it,
It's been hanging
massive.
There a long time. I think we've we're fine at this point, but,
It's not going anywhere.
I can only imagine the type of structure that it takes to hold something like that. But yeah, check out the museum. It's super cool. The gift shop there is very unique.
Oh yeah. Some of the coolest gifts you'd be able to find.
I got four kids myself, and they come visit the museum. They say they're coming to visit me, but I think they're really just going to the museum once a week. Yeah. And they run through it like they've never been through it before.
Really?
Just love it. Yeah.
What's the name of the cat?
Indiana Bones.
Indiana Bones.
Our famous.
Talk about puns.
Yeah. Famous cat.
Famous cat.
Yeah.
And he's cool.
Very cool, man. But you guys, not only so in the gift shop, like, yes, like most museum gift shops, you can go in there and you can buy stuff that is similar to maybe what you've seen on display. But you guys have like subscription boxes and stuff that available.
I have a bone box. So
the bone box.
Yeah, you'll be able to purchase a bone box, and every month you get a random skull.
That's cool.
Skull, fax cards, usually like some miscellaneous stuff: claws, teeth, feathers. You know.
And there is a, I use this word delicately, cult-like following for this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. No, it's a popular deal.
Yeah. Shocking. And
I think the market's growing a lot.
It is. Yeah. Any idea why?
I don't really know. I think a lot more people are getting interested in this kind of stuff just because it's, I think until now with social media and everything, you kind of see what you're missing out on. Like, you know, I always say it with taxidermy as well. Like, taxidermy is great. I love taxidermy. I got tons of taxidermy in my house. But, you know, at some point, having a deer skull on your wall is really cool too. It's like, man, that's just, you could put so many more on the wall and kind of, get the same site trophy, you know?
Yeah. Eventually you run out of room for shoulder mounts. And
yeah, exactly.
Well, room for starters, budget number two, you know, those things are not cheap. It's interesting, and we can get more into the process and that kind of stuff as we go through the episode. But, as someone that has used your skull cleaning for Euro mounts, it is uncomparable to what you get from, I've got a guy that does it in his garage.
Yes.
The level of what you guys get. And let's save that for next segment specifically, because I want to dive in a little bit more to the skull cleaning side of the business.
Sure.
But seriously, go check out the museum. Take your kids. It's a ton of fun. It is on Sunny Lane Road. Kind of southeast Oklahoma City. I'm trying to think what the north...
10313 South Sunny Lane Road.
There you go.
That's the address.
I love it. Go
check it out. It's like you work there.
Yeah.
We have over 550 real animal skeletons in there. So pretty much anything you can think of, we got it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Hey, Goldfish, what's our address here?
Ooh, something. 400 East Britain Road.
Yep, that's it.
There you go.
Booyah.
I wonder if you walked up and down these hallways, how many people here would actually know. That's good you pulled that out. I do love
it. I'm a smart man. I might not know what love is, but I'm a smart man.
There it is.
I love that. So, like many, your family kind of started cleaning skulls and doing that out of the garage, the kitchen table, that kind of thing. At what point, and do you know much about the story of how this really kind of pivoted and not only the process changed, but the scale started to really grow?
So,
I know there's parts of this that are not, you know, totally public also. So
yeah, I think 2008 started getting a little bit more competitive because, you know, when everybody started getting tight on money, I think everybody decided, well, I got to start doing something else on the side. So everybody started, you know, trying to clean skulls in their garage and things. But no, the whole process, we started the process. My father collected domestic beetles off of a cow carcass back in the 80s, and we've been breeding our own beetles ever since. So we have, you know, billions of beetles that clean.
Jay tells us all the time they're our hardest working employees.
Yeah, that's true.
I believe that. They're hungry for it, right?
Yeah. Gotta love that guy.
You need an employee with a hunger.
Always work holidays. Don't call in sick.
Don't even take a lunch break.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the craft.
Yeah.
Man. Gotta love it.
Man. Let's do this. Let's squeeze in a break. When we come back, I want to ask more about these dermastic beetles, a little bit of the process. I've got a couple of stories we can entertain with at my own expense, I think. And then we'll talk some hunting. We'll do all that on the other side. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Second segment. I'm getting ahead of myself
here. Just jumping ahead, man.
I am. I'm all out of sorts without my compadre, Joshua Wildman Stratton. Chatting this week with Jaron Villamoret and Mike Chisholm from Skulls Unlimited and your very own Museum of Osteology right here in Oklahoma City. All right, let's talk skull cleaning. Because everybody, not everybody, but many people out there can think they can do this, right?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Absolutely.
It's not hard to think of, well, yeah, man, if I shoot a deer or I've got, you know, a carcass, I'm going to take the head off. I'm going to, you know, clean it up as best I can, pick it clean with tweezers and a knife, whatever, boil it, you know, maybe throw some bleach in, let that roll for a couple of days and come back and just try to kind of pick it clean. And there's guys out there that will do that for you. And, you know, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes here in the studio, it's cheap to do it that way.
Sure.
I'm amazed at how affordable it is to have you guys clean the skull for starters. But just how much better the product is in a multitude of ways, from the integrity of the bones when you get it back, the color, you know, the longevity of it. I know I'm probably just scratching the surface here of the differences between your process and their processes, but yeah, let's talk just process in general of cleaning a skull. What makes your process unique?
So for one, we use the beetles. You know, that's unique in itself, but some people claim to use beetles, and they do use beetles. But these big taxidermy shops, you can't really use beetles for multiple reasons. First, you got the mounts around. If they get out of their enclosures and they get in your mounts, you can have some serious problems. So we use the beetles, of course, and then we use hydrogen peroxide to whiten. And over the last 36 years of being in business, we come up with some proprietary degreasing methods. So we get all the grease out, if I could put it that way. Yeah. And you know, I don't want to talk bad about anybody, but you know, there's a lot of guys at Facebook that will do a 2-day turnaround on their skulls, and
there ain't no way.
Yeah, well, you can respect that, but you know, you're getting what you pay for in that situation. So, yeah.
And I will say, every now and then we do get people walk in with a whitish skull and say, "Hey, can you make this whiter and or get the grease out of this thing?" Somebody pumped it out in a week, gave it back to him, and you know, eventually it's going to show its face. So that's where we pride ourselves, is really the grease aspect of the skulls.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And when you're talking grease, you're talking like internal, like brain cavity.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It'll leach out to the surface. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make a skull look good in 24 hours, but to do it right, having the beetles remove all the tissue, going through the proper chemicals to whiten and degrease it, you're talking a couple months minimum to really do it right. And, you know, we'll have a skull that will last you the rest of your life. But if you're not careful who you choose, you'll have a skull that won't last a couple months before it starts leaching. Yeah. And then your wife's screaming at you because
gnats. Oh.
Yeah, you get gnats and you got, you know, a terrible odor going on. You know.
Not pleasant.
Yeah.
But we got to figure it out.
Yeah. No, it's dialed.
It's dialed in, man.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Yeah, no, you guys have done several pieces for me. You guys cleaned a deadhead that I found. And I obviously, you know, through consulting you and, you know, local game warden, we got a carcass tag and brought that. And you guys cleaned it up. And what was cool about that is it had been out there for a little while. So you guys did a great job on the skull itself, but the antlers, you know, were very discolored, and you guys were actually able to bring some like vibrancy and life back to the antlers, even on the deadhead.
Yep, we got a great team of finishing technicians. I'll say that.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of time with these specimens, these skulls, so they know what they're supposed to look like. They know what the hunter themselves is looking for.
Yeah,
what kind of color? You know, a lot of times when customers drop off their skulls, they'll kind of feed you some of the information, what they're looking for, like, oh, leave the velvet on, or, you know, please don't take any of the dark colors out of this, you know, antler set. So, you know, these guys really listen, and they're fine-tuned, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. And then I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because when you walk in to drop off, you know, a head, you've got that little kind of receiving room, and there's a bunch of stuff on the wall. You guys will make, like, pedestals, not the right word, but you do a great job of, like, there's mounts that you guys can make.
Yes,
you do, like, the dipping for, I know there's different, like, camo patterns and American flag stuff. Talk to us about that as well.
So, yeah, we have a multitude of different camos. We got American flag, carbon fiber. Yeah,
hydrographing.
Yeah, hydrographing.
Yes. Is it like a hydro dip?
Yes, yeah, same, exactly. Same process as like when you do a gun or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Or do you do that on location?
We don't, no. We have somebody we partner with that does it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
cool.
Shout out, Jeff.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I'm like, man, that is a whole other process and business model. Yeah. Interesting operation you guys run out of that building.
Yes, very interesting.
It's an interesting place for sure. Definitely to work as well. You get to meet some really cool people.
Yeah.
You guys, some really interesting people.
You have to have, like, food handling permits or something like that with just, like, the meat and stuff that's in there?
No, believe it or not.
Well, we do work with the USDA. We have our permits for that type of thing. But
No previous schooling really required. It's kind of like you got the stomach.
Because I imagine if you start Googling some of this stuff, you might get put on some sort of watch list. you know what I mean?
Put it that way, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the stomach.
Yeah.
How do you find people that are interested in doing this?
There's no real surefire way. I mean, I've had people walk in, and in my mind, I'm like, they're not going to last. They're not even going to make it through this interview. And, I just talked to them before I walked out of the shop, you know, been with this for years. And then you get some people in, and you're like, I think this guy could probably do it. He seems a little rough around the edges, and he's doesn't come back from lunch.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Some people walk in confidently.
Oh, yeah.
During the interview process, we intentionally bring people right to the stinky part, you know, because you kind of wean them out pretty quick.
Yeah.
And, they'll walk in and immediately be like, I don't think I can do this. It's like, that's totally fine. I mean, I appreciate you coming by. Or other people are like, this don't bother me at all. And it's like, all right, now let's continue the interview.
So, yeah. I mean, I've been in that, like, there's the receiving reception area.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's, like, the clean side.
Yeah, what
and
we call the clean side.
There's the dirty side.
Yep.
Do you take people all the way back in there for the interview process?
Yeah, it's all part of it.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, Jaron's got the luxury. His office ain't over there anymore. Mine is.
You're in the new building.
Exactly,
now.
Yeah.
I wish I could paint an accurate picture over the radio of what that smell is.
Well, they can experience it themselves.
Yeah.
Bring their skull to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you come by the museum, you can poke your head in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes if you're in the parking lot on a bad day, you can smell it.
No, every day you're in the parking lot, you can smell it. Don't let him lie to you.
Nose blind to it.
Yeah, he's just a little calloused.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you deal with it? Like, do you truly just get to a point that it doesn't bother you, or do you have stock in Febreze, or what's the...
I just think it's more of a mental thing. Like, I just think you can handle it or you can't, and I do believe over time... you kind of get callous to it because, you know, if one of our employees, like, it stinks, like, it's bad. But other times we think it's like, oh, it's not a bad day at all. And people walk in off the street and they're like, I can't even breathe in here. And I'm like, it's not that bad. Okay?
When he says it's mental, let me paint a little picture for you. So it's a Wednesday in the shop. You know, things have been cooking, things have been brewing, you know, everything's, you know, going through all of its stages. And then somebody goes and buys street tacos and comes in the shop with them. I hear more people that work at that facility complain, like, man, what is that smell? And it's just onions off the street taco compared to what we're working in. You guys are complaining about this? That one's for you, Eric.
Has anybody ever accidentally switched up the coolers? Like, you accidentally put your lunch in the wrong place?
No,
we intentionally make sure people don't do that. I think we have a handful of employees that wouldn't care. They'd be like, that's fine. We'll just put my stuff in here. It's like, no. We got a freezer for employees, not a...
I'll say this. You got to watch Jaron. You'll go grab your lunch and there'll be a monkey or something sitting in the refrigerator. Like, Jaron's been here.
Oh, man. That's awesome. You do have some really cool stuff in there. Obviously, the Museum of Osteology stands alone. But then even just in the back of the room, and I'm sure every museum is this way, where you're only seeing a small percentage of the stuff. But I've handled, you know, Kodiak grizzly skulls back there that are just insanely massive.
Blow your mind.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible.
You know,
that's an incredible animal.
Yeah. Yeah. The elephant skulls. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you guys just, you've got some really, you've got, I think there is a cow skull that were like conjoined twins.
Oh,
at
yeah.
The skull.
Yeah, we got two-headed calves and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we clean for the public in taxidermy studios, we clean about 40,000 skulls a year. So we see, I mean, a monster range of animals.
That is impressive. That is a lot of skulls.
Do the math on that. Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's ridiculous, dude.
Now, all those aren't quite people coming off the street taxidermists. We do have a retail site as well.
Sure.
So we sell, you know, we'll process, you know, 2,000 coyote skulls, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, over a couple months. And, you know, so that's where
they can't keep them on the shelf.
But. We can't.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
What do people do with coyote skulls? Just put them on a bookshelf and look at them?
Yeah, I mean, there's that.
They're trying to get that Santa Fe look, Taylor.
Yeah, seriously.
Rusty.
Honestly, I don't. You know, universities will buy them for studies and things like that. But, you know, you'll just see a random skull sold to somebody on the internet, and you're like, what are they doing with that? But I guess it's none of my business, I guess.
It's not. As long as the cash hits the bank account, exactly. Right?
There is something out there for everybody.
No, there is.
There is.
That is true.
I feel that way. We've joked throughout about, you know, just how selective your skill set has to be to do this. Mm-hmm. And I promised a story. We'll tell it at a very high level here. I ruined a freezer, a chest freezer, where I keep all of my wild game meat. Somehow, we're not going to point fingers, didn't get plugged in the right way when we moved into our new house. And I found it about 3 weeks later. And I was beside myself of how am I going to deal with this? Because, you know, I've got young kids. My wife just took a new job. We're living in a new house. There's so much going on. And it just felt like there was one more thing to have to deal with. Oh, by the way, it smells like there's a dead animal in our garage. And our clothes are still out there and all that kind of stuff. So my first thing was like, I'm just going to get rid of it. Like, I'm just going to throw away this chest freezer. And I'm sure anybody that has hunted big game for more than a couple of years has been in this situation. I was like, I'm just going to get rid. Well, you can't even get rid of these things because of the Freon. Like, there are very few places mm-hmm. that'll even take a freezer like this. So then I started trying to clean it out myself, and I got a lot of the way through it, but I didn't have the stomach for it. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what other options I have. And I thought of Jaren. Man, if there's anybody I know that might even just have an idea of what to do with this. So we brought you the freezer, and Mike, it sounds like you were the one that got to pull that lucky straw and do the work.
Believe it or not, it wasn't even the worst part of my week.
I find that very hard to believe.
I appreciate it. You're golden, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you for doing that for me, and you've brought it back. That's the best part. I didn't even have to come pick it up. So I don't know that that's a side of the business you guys really want to get into.
No, not necessarily.
But there may be a market.
No.
Yeah, there may be a market. So thank you guys for doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Just crazy. What other stuff do you guys handle? Like, you mentioned the two-headed calves, and we've talked about the Kodiak bears. More baculum than you probably would expect, right?
A lot more, yeah. Those are popular sellers. I think that's our number one seller is the raccoon baculum.
Yeah. That was something I learned about through the bear hunting journey, but with y'all. And you guys actually cleaned the baculum for my bear, and it is a bookshelf piece at my house.
So. Good conversation starter.
I use it as a coffee stir for our guests.
There you go. I was wondering what everybody used them for.
Toothpicks, right?
Yeah. What was the goldfish? You probably don't know this, but I'm going to set you up. The moonshiners used to use raccoon baculums for something.
I have no idea.
I think it was for their drips.
Yeah.
It was something to do with the way it dripped. I think it dripped off the, I don't Maybe know. That's it.
They would use it to, like, create drip to organize the flow of the moonshine.
It had a purpose in there somewhere, which is kind of neat.
It's really kind of a neat use, but yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, you can search that one on the Googles, maybe not from your work computer.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. Yeah, what are some of the other cool things that you guys have gotten to do?
I mean, man, you name it. We work with, you know, zoos across the country. We're with the museum. We have a lot of animals donated to us that are cleaned and put in the museum. So, honestly, anything you can think of, we've had our hands on.
Literally. If it's got bones, we've We've seen it.
I mean, recently this week we got some wolf eels in from to clean for someone. Those are a wild looking fish.
Yeah,
wolf eels.
Yeah,
wolf
yeah.
eel. Here, I'm going to look it up for you. While
yeah, please.
Here.
And then, are these going to become articulations?
So the skulls will be. Yeah. So they're okay. just the heads, but of course, with fish, you run into the issue of them falling apart.
Yeah.
So it might as well be an articulation at this point when you do a skull of a wolf eel.
Whoa.
Yeah. And the pictures don't even do it justice. Once you get it down to bare skull, it is
they are
kind
really,
of hideous.
Really neat.
Yeah.
They're a pretty cool creature, but yeah, they're there's something to look at, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's one thing we're trying to get less of are fish skulls.
You're trying to get less fish skulls?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but...
mostly because of this, the sheer time it takes to process and articulate, and you know, fish hold a lot of oils. And as well as the technician that we had working all those, he's took a promotion, so it's probably just best we don't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That is, you know, we talk about just the stomach and the interest and willingness to get in and do that job, but those people that do the actual articulations are fascinating, and they are super talented.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. Clark is our main technician. He's been with us 22 years, I think.
Yeah, and he is brilliant.
Yeah, and he's
sharp.
I mean, it is incredible. Oh, you can have it, give him a pile of bones, and he'll have it back together and just.
You don't even have to tell him what it is.
No.
Like, you don't even have to.
You know, it's surprising if you have a skeleton and you just wanted to mess with him, and you took a random bone from another skeleton, threw it in the pile, he would find it and be like, well, "This doesn't belong to the skeleton." In the matter of just a couple hours, because
even having to be like, "Hey, I threw something in."
And if it was even the same animal, and then just a different skeleton, he'd be like, "No, this doesn't go here."
You added an extra.
Oh, you could.
Whatever.
I mean, we would never do that just because we wouldn't waste his time.
Yeah, but sure.
If he did, he could catch it.
The thing that fascinates me the most about Clark when he's putting these skeletons together is, you know, in the taxidermy world, you use reference photos a lot. Mm-hmm. Dude never looks at a photo, but he can make. These skeletons look so naturally posed. It's insane. Like he just got it.
Yeah.
And you don't find that.
There's, I don't even know how to explain it, but there's got to be an art to just understanding the structure and the movement. And I'm sure when you've done it enough times, you know how the joints operate.
Oh, he's had to do thousands.
20 plus years of it. It's all up in his brain.
The snakes fascinate me.
Yeah. The snakes are difficult. So the idea with the snakes, though, is we don't let them fall apart fully. So as they go through the beetles, we'll walk through as the beetles are, you know, removing the tissue. We'll wire each rib to the body as they go. So those are very time consuming.
Yeah.
But we do it, and everything is exactly the way.
No,
it was
the
supposed
beetles
to be.
Do it.
Well, yeah, the beetles do it. But one of our technicians gets in there and wires.
You just got to understand the beetles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you let them go too far, everything falls apart, and then you don't, you know.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do at that point.
Is there one particular day or one particular project over the years that stands out to each of you?
That I can talk about?
Yeah, I was going to say good or bad. Sometimes the bad stuff makes for good radio, but not so much for your job security. But.
Going back to the museums, you know, we worked on that whale skeleton for 30 days, putting it together. And I think that was really memorable for me because I got to be a big part of that. And that was always a cool thing.
That was for the Georgia Aquarium?
No, actually, that's for our museum.
The one that's hanging
Oklahoma's.
Up in there. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it must feel like doing a puzzle. Like, times a million once you complete it. Like, oh.
Well, and it's a puzzle that doesn't want to go back together.
Exactly.
So you got to come up with unique and ways to put it together.
And you mentioned wiring. Is that the primary method of, like, fixing these things back together?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, we pride ourselves at Skulls Unlimited just making sure that when you get a skeleton back from us, it's the highest quality it can possibly be. Everything's going to be wired together, so nothing's glued and that will eventually fall apart. It's all wired. So it'll last for years and years and years and years. I mean, you'd literally have to get in there and start cutting wires to make it come apart again. So,
do people send you pets?
Yes.
Every day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you wish they wouldn't?
Not necessarily. It's
what they ask for.
Yeah, it's just
what they're wanting out of the cleaning itself. You know, sometimes they want the skull, but then other things along with it. And it can get pretty questionable, but, you know, everybody grieves differently, so it's, you know, you just got to take it as it comes.
I'm not a very sensitive guy with my pets, and of course I love my dogs, but, you know, some customers walk in, it's just, they're really upset. I'm like, oh, man, I don't know how to handle this with their pets, you know?
Yeah.
I think the skeletons are easier, though, than taxidermy. I think when they see the taxidermy, they're like, that's not the way... you know, Fluffy looks. It's like, oh, man. So the skeleton, you kind of...
You're not capturing her essence.
Exactly. So
exactly.
The skeletons, I don't think we've ever had a customer that was upset about it. Yeah.
The weird ones, the ones that catch me off guard are the soft mount taxidermy of pets, where they kind of create
bendable
like
ones.
A plush.
I had never heard
I'll
of those
it. It's weird.
Until he talked about it on that episode, and I Googled it. I was like, people do this? I joked with my girl. I showed her a picture. I was like, can we do this to the dog after he dies?
People do
just
it,
just joking.
Man.
Totally joking.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's creepy. It's like the most creepy-looking... stuffed animal you could possibly think of.
It's just like I don't know if
people get them curled up in little doggy beds and keep them by the front door. It's like
it's like the people from the hills that have eyes got sentimental. That would be there.
Oh man,
not for me, but you know, I'm never gonna judge somebody.
Something
wants to
out
get
there
that
for
done,
everyone.
So.
Yeah, what do they say? Don't yuck someone else's yum.
Exactly.
Is that what the kids are saying today?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. We got to draw a line somewhere.
There's got to be a line.
That's fantastic. Hey, we got to squeeze in a break. When we come back, I want to actually talk hunting with you guys. I want to talk about some of the skulls that you've seen. Even just this year, when I was down there dropping off the freezer, there's some nice elk down there.
Oh,
seen
some
good whitetail.
It's been an excellent year for elk.
Let's talk about those, and we'll talk about some actual hunting when we come back.
That's
all right?
Sweet.
This is the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Now, it's the final segment of this week's show. Skulls Unlimited, Jaron Villamoret, and Mike Chisholm in studio this week. I'm Taylor Maples. That's Maddie Goldfish. You said it's been a good year for elk.
Yeah, it's been great. Quite a bit more than we've gotten in recent years. So,
I wonder, and you guys don't have the data on this. I don't know that anybody would have the data on this. I wonder if
Kurt
there
would have it.
Yes. Yeah, Kurt Kuklinski would have this. He would absolutely have the data. I wonder if more people are going from Oklahoma City west elk hunting and therefore bringing back more skulls this direction. I wonder if more people are just finding success because they've been doing it for more years and now they're finally figuring it out. I wonder if the population of elk is just denser than it's been in recent years. There's a lot of reasons you could, you know, start to cast vision as to why this is, but it's a cool sample size. Just talking to you guys, you're seeing more elk skulls than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
More big elk skulls or just a more quantity in general?
Most of the elk we've gotten so far this year, been nice, mature elk.
Mature elk, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of local drop-offs too. So like you mentioned earlier, I think it's all
the
above.
All
the
above, yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk to these customers as they drop off. You know, sometimes we chat for 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Probably not good for business, but yeah.
You're going to get in trouble.
We enjoy talking to them. But no, a lot of these customers are telling us that, you know, the units that they're going to are just loaded. They're like, man, this is the best year I've ever seen for elk, you know. And
wow.
So.
Yeah, and falling back to that, you know, when we do ride up and take in somebody's skull, we're seeing a lot of new clients bringing mm-hmm. them in, as well as even more returning customers, which is great. And, you know, we talk to every one of them, you know, ask where was it taken, you know, all those good questions. And it just generally sounds like elk hunting is becoming more popular.
Yeah.
As well as I think the population is doing really well in most places.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's great. I know there is a local chapter here of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got an RMEF sticker on my truck, right? And, mm-hmm. and I live here.
Is that Jeff that runs that? I can't remember.
We've done some work with them.
Arrowhead Archery.
I know he was a part of it at some point.
Yeah. But you've got guys like Steven Rinella, right? And there is such a movement. It's been going on for a long time. The storytelling of the West. We recently had Ike Eastman from Eastman's Hunting Journal on the show. And, you know, his family was one of the original back, starting in the 50s with his grandfather telling the story of the Canadian Rockies and Western hunting and all of that. But it feels like we're in a generation right now of outdoorsmen where that is kind of being revitalized. And with social media and with all of these great storytellers and videographers and people like Steve Rinella that I'm going to throw under the bus here that keep, you know, and essentially indoctrinating hunters to believe that mule deer are 100 times cooler than whitetail and that everything you do out west is cooler, bigger, you know, more worth the investment of time, money, energy, et cetera. I think that we are seeing more and more emphasis on that. And, for guys like me that have young kids and really only have the chance to hunt locally right now, it's great because it's freeing up the public spaces and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm a public hunter myself.
Yeah? Any luck this year?
Yeah. I've taken two does and pretty nice 6-point all off public.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
How's your year been?
Not so good so far, but yeah. I'm hoping this Sunday, I think with that front moving in, we might have some luck. So.
Supposed to come through again. It's been a really weird early season.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, yeah.
Really weird.
Are you guys seeing any, like, pre-rut activity?
Man, there's some young bucks moving around. I haven't seen anything locked on, but they're definitely moving. They're getting up and around.
I've been seeing the big ones on their feet, but it's always at night.
Nocturnal.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's normal this time of year. They're just getting up checked. I've seen lots of scrapes, though. I mean, they're getting
everywhere. I have seen an abnormal amount of scrapes.
There's some go-to spots on our property that I always check. And, I mean, it looks like a bulldozer went through there. I mean, they're marking almost every tree. I'm like, goodness gracious.
Yeah he's got that's some good fun. Ones out there.
Yeah, no, it is fun. I really enjoy seeing the scrapes. And then you throw a camera on it and you kind of see which bucks are hitting it. It's really cool to me.
Do you guys saddle hunt or what's your...
No, I usually use just ground blinds. I'll use ladder stands and things like that.
I'm a spot and stalk. Every now and then I'll throw the summit in the tree.
Yeah.
You know, climb up. But primarily I'm just on the ground.
Yeah, I love that, man. There's nothing better than being ground level.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had the utmost success that way. Don't get me wrong.
No, I was about to say, getting up in a tree, though.
Sometimes you get up in the tree, that's your only option, and that's your best option, especially depending on the property or, you know, where your focal point is. You want to get up in that tree, but yeah, nothing beats.
If you're on a funnel, though, during the rut, in a tree, I mean, I don't know if there is anything better.
There's not the amount of
activity you get to see and just.
It's a different experience, right?
Yeah.
I love blowing around a little bit, not a ton, but, you know, a little bit of a twist when you're in a ladder stand.
Sure.
There's just something about, you know, that connectedness.
I got some ladder stands on public right now. And
do you?
Yeah, it was like last week. We had like 25 mile an hour gusts. Yeah, I didn't stay in the stand very long. I chickened out.
Yeah. I have not done it, but I'm interested in getting more into saddle hunting just because my time is so limited.
Yeah.
You know, the access I have is very limited right now. I just got off of a lease that I'd been on for several years since we moved. And I'm like, man, I love the idea of being able to go out and just almost spot and stalk, but then get elevated. Like, find a spot for that day. Maybe it's a scrape that I check out. I'm like, I want to hunt over this scrape and immediately just boogie up the tree, not have to be like, all right, now can I get a stand in here? And do I need to trim some branches? And it just, I'm almost at a point where, and this is just me, you know, personally, the labor of hanging a stand is becoming a barrier to me even getting out and hunting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think the saddle stuff, at least in concept, eliminates that. So,
yeah.
But spot and stalk, you know?
Yeah.
You just play
sometimes
the wind
on public,
lot.
That's your best option because, you know, you head into the woods and you get all set up and then who's coming in behind you? Where are they going?
Yeah.
You know, so you want to kind of move around. I'm a fond believer in that.
Are you interested in sharing some of your tactic with our listeners, spot and stalk on public? Like, are you looking for bedding areas?
Find bedding.
Okay.
You know, find that bridge between bedding to bedding. That's really played well for me.
Yeah.
You know, obvious, there's all the obvious water, food, those good things when they present themselves on public property. But, bedding areas.
Yeah. For what you told me too, sometimes you don't have to go very far in. You know?
All these guys are like, "Oh, you want to go all the way to the very far back where nobody." I've shot the biggest public buck I've ever shot. I could see my truck. I was just set up right on the fire break, and yeah, he just came through. I wasn't even in the tree for 20 minutes.
I hear so many stories every year, and it makes you just question everything about, you know, a guy that I know killed a great 12 this week, 6x6, in a stand that he had just hung that morning. Yeah, these guys are pointing fingers at each other right now. And
just happened.
He got blown at by two spikes on his way up the ladder stand. And I'm not kidding, the way he tells it, not 5 minutes later, this stomper comes out, and it's like it goes against everything we think as deer hunters, but it happens, man. And part of that is we're November now. We're not in the heavy rut yet, but the rules kind of start to change, and you get away with a little bit more. But, man, it's like as soon as you think you figured this game out, it changes on you, right?
Yeah. A lot of times caution goes to the wind with some of these big bucks. That's why a lot of them get killed. But, yeah, and they during this time of year, not quite this time of year, but sometimes it happens early. You got a doe that pops early, and next thing you know, you got a big mature buck running through.
Yeah.
Okay. And all he's doing is looking for that doe, and he's not even thinking about what's right in front of him.
So. Yeah. And I love this time of year also because you get options to see deer that are just kind of transient, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've got your kind of local bucks that maybe you've got on camera if you've got some of those out, and you know, hey, we've watched this deer for 3 years, and now maybe is the time that we're going to get a chance to actually want to kill him. But then all of a sudden, it's like, man, we've never seen this buck before, and he'll be there for 2 or 3 days, and then you may never see him again.
Yeah, sometimes it's you'll see him, and then you'll never see him again. Or, you know, you'll see him, and he'll disappear, and a month later he shows back up. And, I mean, you just never know. You know, I'm pretty blessed in a situation where we own some property, but, you know, social media nowadays is making people feel guilty for taking any opportunity to shoot something that, you know, on public, or I would have let that deer walk. I'm like, okay, not everybody has the same opportunities.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not ever going
to feed.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell anybody you shouldn't, you know, shoot a legal deer or not. Like, I don't know. You know, some people have opportunities to shoot big deer because they, you know, have the property and have this, you know, opportunities to let those deer get bigger. And, you know, but some people are lucky to get out on a random weekend and, you
know, pop a doe.
Exactly. And, you know, and the next thing you know, people are just hassling them. I'm like,
what? You know, you hear people say, oh, you can't eat the antlers. The trophy's nice. Don't get me wrong. You know, when it happens. But, you know, when you're just in the preservation mode and putting meat in the freezer, it's like, don't let anybody make you feel any certain type of way, you know, for providing for yourself and your family. You know, I talk to a lot of public hunters. Sometimes I hunt before I come to work.
Yeah. Is that why you're late?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, I got all these kids.
I assume that was cool. I thought we knew about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure we're all this way, but I'm very much on a journey of figuring where I stand on that. Because I have for years been like, man, if you want to kill giant deer, you got to pass on big deer.
No, that's true.
It's true.
Absolutely. And I've had years that I pass on good deer, and I look back and wonder, man, I'm never going to see that buck again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up hanging on the neighbor's wall or laying in the bar ditch down the road because somebody smoked him with their 2,500 pickup. You know, like,
yeah.
I think and I had this conversation this week with a buddy. Today, I'm of the opinion that, and I've come to this through fly fishing, you know, the fly fishing guides will all tell you, you never leave fish to go find fish.
Exactly.
And I'm kind of, especially in a two buck state, right?
Yeah.
If you've got property that you're really managing at a high level, okay. I think that's really a small percentage of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have never killed a deer that I wished I had waited another year on. Yeah, I've killed deer that probably would have been bigger the next year, but I've never been like, man, I shouldn't have taken that, you know? And I've never passed on a buck that I looked back and was like, you know, I'm really glad I decided not to shoot that deer, you know, like a big deer. Obviously, we all pass on the forks and that kind of stuff from time to time, but I've passed on a couple of big deer over the years in hopes that they would be giants. And then I spend the next 11 months saying, I don't really know that I care about killing a giant.
Yeah.
I pass an opportunity at a big one.
No, I think God's got a plan for all of us. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Yeah. But, you know, and I let a lot of my close friends hunt our place. And I you know, sometimes I have a deer I've been chasing for 3 years. And he's a monster this year. Giant. I saw him at night the other night on a, and I tell my buddies, he walks out, shoot him. Yeah. And they're like, you're crazy. Like, dude, shoot him.
He keeps
like,
telling me that, but I'm like, dude,
you'll never.
I've
seen that deer.
Yeah.
You know, like, if he couldn't daylights live with myself, while you're hunting and you have an opportunity to put an arrow in him, do it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be upset. Like that. It would just be cool to close the chapter on that deer, just knowing that. Wow. Yeah. But, or he'll get hit by a car tomorrow, and then I'll never, you know, or he'll disappear.
And then you'll never know. There's no
closure. I'll never see him again. There's, you know, the fact that I've seen him this many years in a row is really cool. But he's like a ghost. He's hard to pin down. But I've caught him in daylight every year.
What do you call him? Do you have a name?
I call him Brokaw because when he was 2 years old, he broke off one of his antlers in late November.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to see. Like, I named him that, and then I had some. The next year, he was a nice 3 year old. And like I said, I've had buddies that hunt with me, and they're like, and I actually had him come in, and a buddy of mine that's never shot a deer ever, I was like, you want to shoot that deer? And he's like, you're really going to let me shoot him? I'm like, yeah, go for it, dude. So he drew his bow back and he hit the blind. He spooked and ran off. I was like, yeah, guess it wasn't meant to be, man. And then, you know, the next year he got even bigger, and now he's just a monster. I'm like, man, he's just old, big old brisk. I mean, he's just giant mature deer, and I'm like, man, that
is very mature deer.
I was like, that is so cool that he's gotten this age and all the opportunities. How many people have hunted out there have never got? I've seen him multiple times with a rifle. I didn't have a rifle with me, but during rifle season,
yeah.
And I'll never knock a rifle hunter. I love rifle hunting, but I always try to hunt with my bow, and I was like, man, if I had a rifle right now,
like, hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
So the $1 million question here. If you knock down Brokaw, are you going to do a shoulder mount, or are you going to do a euro?
I'll do a pedestal mount. Okay. Yeah, he'll be going. He'll be going somewhere really nice. Last year, I had a good friend of mine invite me down to his ranch in South Texas, and like I said, he had a coal buck, and
coal buck.
Yeah, a coal buck on their ranch, and it's a pretty cool story with him though, because he's sending me pictures of this deer, and just a giant body deer down there in South Texas, and he's like, I was like, you're really. I was thinking, you're going to let me shoot this buck? He's like, yeah, no, he's just a cold buck.
We need that one gone.
Yeah, we need him gone. I was like, man, if he's there in 2 weeks, count me in. I'll be there. And he texted me like a week later, and he's like, hey, man, some of the family went down there, and they shot him in the neck with a rifle, but he ran off. So I was like, unfortunately, he's probably gone. They just tried to shoot him in the neck down there and drop him where they're standing. They don't want to track him. There's cactus and everything.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, man, you know, I know how it is. And then a couple of days before I went down there, he's like, he's back at the feeder with a big hole in his neck. I'm like, are you serious?
Tough animals.
Dude, it's incredible. And I went down there, and fortunately enough, he came out chasing a doe one morning when I was there, and I put an arrow in him, and I watched him fall. And he's in my office at the shop now.
That's awesome.
It was a cool story behind it, though, just getting shot like that. I'm like, yeah. How in the world? When I was skinning him, I was like, how did this deer survive this? This is
always
great.
Bet on the deer. It's amazing. I know you guys have seen it, but the number of, and we are way over time, so we're going to have to wrap this up quickly here, Goldfish. But the number of deer that, you know, you go to clean, and you're like, there's a broadhead in this one, and there's
lots of bears and things like that, too. Yeah.
Stuck in the vertebrae. And
Yeah. Always bet on the deer.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you guys for your time, for coming in.
Absolutely.
Listeners, take your skulls to Skulls Unlimited. Their skull cleaning business is second to none here in Oklahoma City. You can mail them in. You know, there's a process there. Just connect with these guys, and they can tell you how they need it and what that looks like. But I promise you, I've got a skull in my office here in the radio studio that you guys did, and it is one of my most prized possessions. The quality is just immaculate. It is worth every single penny. You will get such a better product than you're going to find anywhere on Facebook or from anybody locally. And it is surprisingly affordable to have such excellent work done. So
we appreciate that, man.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Go check those guys out at Skulls Unlimited. On behalf of Mike Chisholm and Jaron Villamorette, I am Taylor Maples. That is Maddie Goldfish. Special shout out to JD Adams and Company, the fly fishing shop here in Oklahoma City on the northwest corner of North May Avenue and 122nd for your support of this show and outdoor content. We thank you for listening. Find us on social media at Outdoor Hour. What is the social handles for Skulls Unlimited? I know, or at least the museum. I know you guys have some stuff that you post. Do you know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, we have the Skulls Unlimited, and we have Skull Cleaning.
Okay.
That you can check out on Facebook. And then, of course, the museum has its own page. So
yep.
Definitely check it all out. And then, of course, our famous cat has its own page, too. So
Indiana Bones.
She's got like a 250,000 followers. Yeah. Sucker.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It is wild.
That's awesome. This is the Outdoor Hour. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.